Ryan, I was watching the telecast and I could tell there is at least one or maybe even two students rocking the new home field bomber jacket. I hope they took advantage of our promo code GG23, but I'm telling you, those things stuck out on the telecast and they look good.
They are snazzy. I actually walked past somebody going into the stadium and I was like, that's a nice jacket. And they go, trust me, we know. And it's just so snazzy, especially with the holidays coming up. Or even if you're a big Gopher hockey Rube, they got unique vintage stuff that you're not going to see around the arena. So what I want you to do, go to homefieldapparel.com, find Minnesota, look through, whether it's sweatpants, sweatshirts, it's wife approved. They're going to take it from you because it's so comfortable of material. And when you get to checkout, use promo code GG23 to save 15% off your first order. That's promo code GG23 for 15% off your first order of Home Field Apparel.
Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buehr.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to your masochist edition, part two of
Illinois Lord version. Gopher, yeah.
Of the Gopher football team does everything yet again but win the game as another defensive implosion on the final drive of the game for an offense that hadn't found a whole heck of a lot in the second half. Leads to a 27-26 defeat at home. Minnesota watches the rest of the Big Ten West lose games, sinks to themselves. I guess I'll join in on the party, as it almost feels like, yet again, they're going to watch a Big Ten West title, which is incredibly attainable, fall to the wayside. But luckily for us, and luckily for you, the listener, I understand if you don't want to listen to the whole part of this, but at least listen to the dulcet tones. A former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, my second cousin, Dinky Town Athlete's Own, Derek Burns. Derek, you and I have had a lot of thoughts and feelings. Luke Buehr has a lot of thoughts and feelings. And I'm glad that instead of going to therapy, just like most men, you know what we do? We get on a podcast.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me back. Yeah, we have had quite a conversation, interesting chess match on Saturday, and there's a lot to break down. So I'm excited to be back with you guys.
All right. So we'll start with the Gopher defense. I think as much as people want to rag on the offense, we have to address the elephant in the room that is this Gopher defense that gives up 27 points to the Fighting Illini and once again gives up a late fourth quarter drive, which ultimately does the Gophers in. I'll say this, fellas, the state of Illinois seems to have the Gopher defense's number this season. They've definitely found a way to exploit this Gopher defense, which traditionally has been very, very good. But on the game, Illinois amasses 19 first downs, 371 total yards, 297 of those come through the air. I think also important to note, at least according to Game on Paper, when you look at explosive plays, Illinois was able to generate six explosive plays. Game on Paper defines an explosive play as an EPA for passing greater than 2.4 and for rushing greater than 1.8. All of those were passing generated explosive plays. And, you know, this is something that obviously Joe Rossi and his defense pride themselves on. Ryan is not giving up explosive plays, but on the day when you get doubled up in the explosive play category, things likely aren't going to go your way.
They are certainly not. And I think where we got to start is, unfortunately, the final drive of the game, or at least the final three plays, because you couldn't ask for a better start to that final drive where you get Illinois running the ball with 2 minutes left, which was certainly an interesting choice. You see some time run off and you're thinking to yourself, okay. And then Luke Altmaier gets a 19-yard completion, but it comes back on holding. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, second and 18 at the 8. No way they can lose this. Well, Minnesota then gets a sack, and they knock out the starting quarterback. And so it's fourth and 11 at the Illinois 15 with 85 seconds left. And you're thinking to yourself, there's not a chance Minnesota finds a way to blow this, right? 22-yard completion to the left where Trey Jones slips out of his break and Isaiah Williams gets it. Another pass gets him to midfield. And then a play that is going to go down in history here in the 2023 season, one that we have spent in the pre-production meeting breaking down for the last 10 minutes. Minnesota plays cover two, and the slot receiver gets behind Tyler Newbin for a touchdown. Now, how does that happen? Derek, you're the one that everybody wants to hear here. So I'm going to give you the reins before Luke and I provide our commentary. Can you give a detailed breakdown here of what happened on first and 10 from the Minnesota 46?
Well, Illinois puts Isaiah Williams in motion, and you can see that Cody Lindenberg checks with both safeties pre-snap to make sure that he does not have deep middle. So Cody's going to run with that slot receiver up until the secondary level, and that's what happens. But he's making sure to check with the safeties that they have deep middle if that slot runs a middle, what he did, a skinny post or post route to the middle of the field. Ultimately, what happens and why it was a touchdown is both of the safeties become occupied with the split receiver routes. So to their defense, they have to first check the outside receiver if they get behind the corner because it's a zone. So if either of the outside receivers run a go route, that's their first responsibility. So they have to check that first. But they also then their second check is to go to the middle, and they have to do that quickly. And the play is extended. There is a good rush, but the play is extended by the quarterback, and both safeties effectively just spend too long. They get caught up defending the outside route, and they don't recover to the middle of the field to check that post receiver. So that's why it ends up being a touchdown. We'll probably talk about this, but same exact coverage where Tyler Newbin got an interception earlier in the game, and they played
it literally 3 minutes before.
Yeah, and they literally played it perfectly on that, where they did not become occupied with the outside receivers, and both safeties, both Goosby and Newbin. Newbin ends up with the pick, but Goosby actually plays it perfectly too. He recovers back to the middle of the field to take the deep receiver, and Tyler steps in front for the touchdown, but they become occupied on the touchdown with the outside receiver. And I guess my criticism on the play, two things. The coverage choice on that play being that they're down 6 points is a little bit suspect to me. But more importantly, I think you have to have awareness of the personnel. Yes, you can get caught up in your reads, your assignment, etc. But Isaiah Williams was their only really effective passing threat all game. When they run him in motion as safety, either of them, in my opinion, you have to be watching that. I know it doesn't mean you abandon your scheme of checking the outside receiver first, but you really should have a red flag going off in your head when he gets motion into the slot. And unfortunately, they were lulled to sleep. And great pass, great read, extended the play by the quarterback, and won him the game.
And I want to.
I mean, I'll take it a step further. I don't know how in the world you're in cover two there, because their only good player is the slot receiver. And where is the slot receiver going to run more times than not? To the middle of the field. Where are the cover two safeties going to sit? Kind of in the thirds. How are you not in cover three or cover four there, where you're just keeping everything in front of you? They literally have one good receiver. He's killed you all game. He's got 10 receptions at this point before the final drive. Yet you're sitting in cover two. And the most frustrating part about it to me is I asked Cody Lindenberg and Tyler Newbin after the game what happened. And they said there was a miscommunication. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I'm going to see something on the rewatch where they're not all on the same page. Newbin, Goosby, and Lindenberg all look at each other and they make this belt sign. They're all on the same page in theory, in concept. Yet I just think to myself, I don't put this on the players for that. I think if you're going to, again, it's why are you in cover two there when they have a slot receiver that is their only threat? And I can't fathom it, because to Derek's point, Goosby has to honor the in route because it's trips, which, by the way, Minnesota gives up 3 touchdowns on the day out of trips, and they played none of them well.
What coverage did they play, Ryan, on all those?
And that's how it gets behind him. And that's just, that's why I'm frustrated, Luke, is you shouldn't be sitting there when the opponent's best skill position player, best receiver is a slot receiver. And if I have to hear one more time from the head coach that this team needs to have more situational awareness, he said the same thing after the Northwestern game. Yet here we are 9 games into the year, and this happened again, Luke.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting there, at least from my perspective, is I agree with you. I don't necessarily agree with the cover two decision and the situational awareness of not knowing where Isaiah Williams is. Again, Isaiah Williams on the day, 13 receptions, 131 yards, 2 touchdowns, you know, the long being that 46-yard one we're talking about here. But the irony is, you know, you've got some discourse online saying that, well, this is what prevent defense gives you. Well, actually, the Gophers weren't playing prevent defense. And in some ways, I would almost argue that they got lulled into not playing your traditional prevent defense because they had been able to get some pressure. For instance, knocking out Luke Altmaier just the play before Paddock comes in. And, you know, you then would have forced Paddock to dink and dunk, which ultimately, you know, ultimately, I think you maybe would have had a better chance actually playing like a prevent quarters defense in that situation, but they didn't. They stuck with it. Yes, they were able to get good pressure on him, but I don't want to take away from John Paddock on that play. Like, he did a phenomenal job of buying time and eluding pressure, using eyes to manipulate the safety. He particularly manipulated Tyler Newbin, in my opinion, which bought him just enough time and opened that crease up. And it's a good play call. Like, you have to, football's a chess match, Derek. We talk about this all the time. And on Saturday, Illinois just was better at the chess match, in my opinion, especially late and especially in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, just rewinding back to the first half and in the beginning of the game, Minnesota wanted nothing to do with man coverage, and the reason for that is they didn't want the quarterback running the ball. I think that was well scouted. They kept him from running the ball. They did some more man pressures in the second half, which actually helped, but in the first half, particularly the first quarter and a half, they were all zone all the time. And I think Illinois, and to get to your point of the chess match, They had this scouted, and they sat back and threw 3-step passes. So they did dink and dunk right down the field because they had seen that Minnesota is not particularly aggressive with their zone coverages in the first half. They like to sit back, play coverage, see what the opponent is going to do, and then they will dial more pressure as you get into the red zone or as the game goes on. And so Illinois had their number and thought, okay, we're just going to sit back and you know, catch the snap and throw, catch and throw, catch and throw, and went right down the field. And that's really what hurt Minnesota. And then, as we've talked about on the final touchdown, same thing, coverage breakdown on the first touchdown, same play, actually, different personnel. But they had the third receiver run a skinny post, and Minnesota was soft in the middle. So Illinois won the chess match, I thought, on both sides of the ball the whole game. Well-coached Brett Bielema has the reputation of kind of being this hard-nosed coach because his teams are very physical and tough. He's a good chess match coach. He is a coach that will always try and take away your strength. I knew that he would try and take away Minnesota's ability to control the ball on offense and run, which they did in the second half. And then on offense, they force you to defend the whole field. And, you know, so it was, just to stick with defense here, zone pass defense was the Achilles heel of the Gopher defense on Saturday.
Would you agree that that was also the Achilles heel in that fourth quarter comeback for Northwestern?
I would. It was the same. Yep. A lot of the same type of breakdowns.
I think the reality too, Ryan, is that they have been really good in zone defense in years past. They just haven't been very good this year in zone coverage. I think that is the biggest delta between, like, you know, the previous seasons and this season.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's just inconsistencies with the details of it. Again, Rossi loves to talk about the details. His players love to talk about the details. And then on a play where everybody's on the same page, they don't execute the details. Now, again, I can bemoan the cover two aspect of it, but even go back to earlier in the game where on the first touchdown, Tyler Newbin and Devin Williams are not on the same page. Devin Williams looks like he doesn't understand what the call is. He plays it like he doesn't understand what the call is. And then same thing, slot touchdown to the tight end, wide open in cover two. Next touchdown, Minnesota sitting in zone coverage, their slot corner, Tyler Bride. He covers the same player as Cody Lindenberg, and where he's supposed to be, it's a wide open touchdown. zone coverage. It's just they're not very good in zone. And to me, and I texted with Derek about this, Bielema is good in the chess mats, absolutely, but you get a bye week for him to prepare. It certainly looked like their quarterback, Luke Altmyer, was prepared for zone coverage. I mean, he was getting the ball out quick in the first half. He was accurate. Didn't look like Minnesota threw anything at him that he didn't expect. But they just – they did not execute at a high enough level. And that's the frustrating part is we're bemoaning the defense, and they deserve to be bemoaned, to be quite honest with you. But then you see stretches of this game.
Yeah.
Where they make plays where Cody Lindenberg, and I don't want that to be lost in this. I mean, I'd argue Cody Lindenberg might have played his best game as a Gopher yesterday. Leads the team in tackles. A peanut Tillman punch was really good in the run game at a 90-plus run defense grade. He was really good. You had Newbin make another play. I mean, there and then the pass rush continues to be, I think, one of the most improved aspects of it. And it's not just Ja Joyner. I think it's a multitude of guys, but obviously – Ja seems to be coming into his own the last couple of weeks. So there were good aspects of this game for this defense, boys. It's just when it goes bad, 54-yard swing pass touchdowns happen. 54-yard game-losing touchdowns happen. And you get lost in zone coverage twice in the red zone out of trips. And you're just – it's frustrating in that aspect where you play well 80-85% of that game, but the 15% is just nuclear bad.
Yeah, I think that that's the I think that Fleck made a good point in his post-game press conference. In a game like this, you know, these kind of mistakes are magnified, right? And I agree with that, but there was some really good things. I think, Ryan, I don't have all the stats in front of me, but 9 TFLs in this game for this Gopher defense. I think that had to be a high on the season for them. There were flashes where they were really good. The Tyler Newbin interception play Derek alluded to, that was played perfectly, kind of baited them into it almost, and they were able to make the interception. This defense has still been opportunistic, but the reality is the consistency hasn't been there. And I think the other reality is that if there is a weakness, it is the pass defense, right? Michigan was able to exploit them, obviously North Carolina. We've seen in both of their losses, Northwestern. Yeah. I mean, this team does well if you struggle and are more one dimensional, like an Iowa, like a Nebraska or whatever, right? If they're a little bit more one dimensional, this defense does well. But when they can play complementary football, but more importantly, when they have the quarterback that could kind of pick you apart, as Derek alluded to. And Derek, you probably should talk about this from a strategic standpoint. You know, in that zone too, it's all about lulling this defense to sleep and then, you know, just continuing and continuing until you're able to finally break one.
Yeah, Illinois' strategy passing the ball is they throw short to the flats, so they force you to defend bubble screens, flare routes to the running back, and they force you to bring your safeties up to defend those outside routes, and they lull you to sleep with that, and they hit you deep in the middle of the field. So again, good chess match strategy where they force your defense to be very aware and have to cover a lot of the field. And I think that when we talk about the breakdowns in Gopher defense, and you bring up a good point, Luke, they haven't been as good this year. And I think it's important to think about why that is. And I think that my answer to that is that outside of Tyler Newbin, Justin Wally, Jack Henderson, and Cody Lindenberg, I think the rest of the team in coverage is just slow with their post-snap reads. I don't think it's an athleticism or a speed thing. Is Trey Jones fast enough? Yes. Are the rest of the defenders out there strong enough, athletic enough, fast enough to they're not getting yes, they are. They're not getting beat necessarily, but they're slow with their post-snap reads. They look unconfident in their zone drops. And many times you'll see that there's a guy open in a pocket and, you know, he catches it and they're right on him, but they're two steps or one step slow on it. So, you know, the recipe for that generally is it's reps. It's reps in practice. It's mental reps on film. It's more game reps to get that squared away. But in the meantime, they were forced into it in this game in particular because of the fact that they weren't going to rely on man coverage because they didn't want the quarterback to run. And so they did look their best, I think, in that middle of the game, or at least the first part of the third quarter, where They did dial up some more man pressures. They became a little less predictable. The front four started to get, you know, interesting to talk about the pass rush for a second. I disagreed with the telecast when they talked about in the first half, well, their Gophers aren't getting any pass rush. The ball was out in a second and a half on those plays. When they're running underneath routes and the quarterback's able to catch and throw to his first option, the pass rush is nullified. But if you saw in the second half where Joyner and Logan Redding and guys that were able to start to get pressure, it was because the quarterback had to go to their second or third, go to his second or third option. So when the coverage got better in the second half, that's when the pass, I think the defensive line has continued to play really well. I think the linebackers in their run fits are better than they were in the first half of the season. They continue to improve. The last facet of this defense that needs to come together is the zone pass defense from those players that we mentioned.
It's just, I don't disagree with anything. It's just, I'm a little flummoxed as to why Rossi kept with the zone when they weren't. He knew, he had to have known Minnesota's zone defense, pass defense, that being, hadn't been good really. And to Derek's point, that's why they implemented it, is because Luke Altmaier's legs had been Illinois' best rushing asset all year. He just ran for 100 yards in the previous game, led the Big Ten among quarterbacks in scramble yards. You remember Luke and I talking about it in the preview. But why not adjust looks, especially in just certain situations where if you're going to – I mean, if you're going to ask me what's my number one ask for this team going into 2024, it's to find a viable passing – slot corner. Jack Henderson can give you something absolutely in first and second down, but it's clear that they don't trust him against a shiftier guy like Isaiah Williams. Minnesota has no counter for a really good slot right now, which is why you saw Cody Lindenberg in there. You saw Tyler Bride until he got benched. You saw, it's just, they don't feel good about what they have in the slot. And if that's going to change in next year's defense, I think you got to bring somebody else in, or you're going to have to see a lot of improvement from some of the younger guys.
You think that if they don't lose a Beanie Bishop to the portal, they're in a better situation?
I think Beanie Bishop would certainly have helped there. Absolutely. I think he's got like an 80 PFF grade for West Virginia, both in coverage and just overall. It just, it kind of is what, I mean, that's where hindsight is obviously 20/20, and what happened with Beanie, but like,
yeah.
They would. Do I think they would be better, especially in passing down situations from the slot, if Beanie Bishop was on the team? 100%. But you have to do with what you have there
right
in your secondary right now.
Yeah.
And I just – I feel for the pass rush. I do, because they got after it in this game against an Illinois offensive line that hadn't played well overall this year, had played better in the last few weeks. But I do want to make sure we touch on guys like Ja Joyner, who has the strip sack, has two sacks on the day. Anthony Smith forces the fumble, where he's, to Luke's point, after that play, Luke had texted the group and said, Anthony Smith gets held into a forced fumble.
Yes. He literally got held in. His helmet knocked the ball out because he was being held so bad.
You had Danny Strigow with a key sack. I mean, even on the final play where the, I mean, you've Ja Joyner beat him around the edge. Danny Strigow drops to make sure that the quarterback doesn't escape, triggers, gets pressure. It's just complementary defense includes all three levels.
Yeah.
And I think the defensive line is playing well. I think Cody Lindenberg is playing well. I think Devin Williams wishes he would have that game back, especially on that swing pass, which I'll say this. I think the way I interpreted that play is Devin Williams was supposed to force that inside. And I think Tyler Newbin played it as Devin Williams was going to force it inside, because that was probably Dev's responsibility. He doesn't force it inside. It gets on his outside shoulder. Newbin doesn't expect that, takes a poor angle. It looks horrible for Newbin. And then Caden Feagan, 250 pounds downhill, outruns Cody Lindenberg. So it's just this defense in these key spots just – Luke,
Can I give you a couple other guys, or at least one other guy I thought played well in flash at times? I thought Justin Wally jumping up on a couple of those screens, getting around blocks,
absolutely
like
he obliterated Isaiah Williams on one of them.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, he triggered well on those quick screens to the outside, I thought, especially as the game went on.
And
have individual performances within this game defensively
that are
absolutely applaud-worthy that should be noted. It's just collectively, you're nine games into the year now, and you're still having coverage breakdowns like you are in the first half. But, Derek, who else do you want to highlight?
Well, I was just going to say Justin Wally also takes away a touchdown with a great pass breakup. His back is to the quarterback.
Newbin, too.
Newbin also a great pass breakup, which leads me to the one thing I want to make sure what didn't go unsaid. This is Division I Power 5 football. I thought both of Illinois' quarterbacks were very sharp.
Yes.
And sometimes you're going to play. I mean, I think back to Gophers against Maryland, Tua Tagovailoa. I think that was the COVID season. There just wasn't much. I mean, the defense played pretty well, and he was just lights out. And I think for 70% of this game, the Illinois quarterback was lights out. Yes, there was coverage breakdowns, but here's the thing. You still have to identify the open receiver. You still have to throw strikes. On the winning game-winning touchdown, the quarterback extends the play. If he doesn't do that, he's pressured or he gets sacked or whatever. He extends the play, throws an absolute dot to the post receiver for a touchdown. So really good play out of the Illinois quarterback. And I remember texting Ryan and asking, has the quarterback at that time was Altmaier, has he played this well? And I don't think he had played that well consistently. And I think, again, part of it was Minnesota's coverage. But the other part of it is he just played well. Sometimes the teams that you play, the players are going to have games. And even on those two pass breakups we just talked about, Justin Wally and Tyler Newbin, those were both incredible throws. Mm-hmm. I mean, incredible downfield throws. So it was a day for the Illinois quarterbacks, both as a part of, I think, the deficiency in the Gophers' coverage, but also they just played well.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the Gopher defensive line, I think, as you said, Derek, was able to do a good job. And, their run fits were decent. Caden Fegan had 22 carries for 84 yards. But, if you adjust for sacks and the rest, that Illinois only had 36 for 74, 2.1 yard average. Their longest on the day was 12 yards. All in all, they were able to hold Illinois' rushing attack intact, but that wasn't their strategy. They ran just enough to be able to enable their pass game.
Exactly.
I'll ask this question. I know we talked a tiny bit about it in the pre-production meeting, but one of the things, playing quarterback, when you have to be able to pick apart a zone defense like that, one of the things that can make that challenging when it's a catch and throw is getting your hands up. That's something the Gophers don't seem, from a strategy standpoint, to implement, Derek.
I don't think that's part of their ethos. We haven't seen that become a thing really ever. So, and I think that, it's a risk benefit, or it's a, you have to give and take. I think if you're focusing on that, then you're going to obviously take away your ability to get to the quarterback, because correct, if you're stopping your pass rush after two steps and going up and trying to jump up and bat the ball down, you're not going to get home on the quarterback if he holds it. So it's a give and take. But to your point, yes, if you're going to play with a soft zone coverage and let the quarterback throw underneath and he's going to get the ball out that quickly, you're just not going to get home on a pass rush. And so that's where maybe on film study or when you go back and correct, you're making that a point of emphasis. But it doesn't seem to be a part of their strategy in the way they coach the defensive line.
Okay, any final comments? I think we've covered a lot here. There was definitely some good, but there was obviously some bad. And I think that it is, as much as people are going to want to bemoan the offense and have frustrations with that, and we'll get into that later after a break, I think the reality is you got to be able to give up less than 27 points in a Big Ten West game in particular. Kudos to the Illinois staff and the chess match that they obviously won, and kudos to the quarterback and Isaiah Williams.
I think the only other thing I would add is, to your point, Luke, everybody wants to talk about the offense and flex philosophy, and we'll talk about it, but in the Big Ten West, if you score 26 and 34 points, you should be able to win that football game, and it's not because of the offense is being the primary issue in either one of those contests.
Ryan, as you know, I'm one to do. I don't always watch games live, so I watched this one after I got done doing some yard work. I had my AirPods in. Again, found them, both functioning great. I actually can hear TCF Bank Stadium, so my Comply Foam ear tips did wonders in keeping out the noise that I might be able to hear there that could have spoiled the game for me. I got to tell you, man, these have been a life changer, especially when I'm out doing yard work, because I never have to adjust them.
And with the holidays coming up especially, if you're thinking, what's a cool gift for my significant other, my kids maybe, I guarantee they got earbuds, and I guarantee they got those silicone tips on them. They cause pain. You're constantly adjusting them. You're pushing your earbuds in all the time. Get these Comply Foam memory phone tips for them. You're no longer going to have your ear pain. You're no longer going to be adjusting. Again, it's a very thoughtful gift, and you're supporting a local company here from Minnesota. So what I want you to do is, whether you got AirPods, whether you got Beats, whatever they may be, they got so many different brands that they cover. Go to complyfoam.com, find what they have, order some, and when you get to checkout, use promo code GG23 for 20% off your order. A great gift, a thoughtful one, especially for your kids, for your significant other. Complyfoam.com, find these memory foam tips today and save 20% off your order with promo code GG23.
If you are looking to buy or sell your house, Team Dinkytown Real Estate Group has a vast amount of experience in selling and buying homes. They will represent you, but they will also support Dinkytown athletes using 1% of the sale price for you to elect what sport you may want to designate that money to go to. It could be football. It could be men's basketball. It could be women's basketball. It could be volleyball. It could be hockey. You can make that designation on your own. It seems like a great way to give back to Gopher Sports with you really doing nothing different.
Nothing different. And as we've already talked about at length, they've sold the house already, $50,000 over asking in just 3 days and 7 offers. Plus 1% of that went to Dinkytown Athletes, the NIL Collective, over $4,000. That makes a difference. So if you're thinking about selling your home and you're thinking, I don't really know a good realtor, go to teamdinkytown.com. 1% of that purchase price is going to go to Dinkytown Athletes. You're going to get exactly what you want for your money. So give them a call today at 612-250-8562 or go to teamdinkytown.com.
Okay, let's get into this Gopher offense. Obviously, this is the largest focus usually when we break down games. It seems to be the common discourse on Twitter and whatnot. But on the day, the Gophers amassed 26 points of total offense. They have 16 first downs. They have 260 yards of total offense, 167 through the air and 93 on the ground. Ethan Kaliak-Manis on the day was 11 for 22 for 167. I do feel like those stats are slightly misleading given the last drive where they were unable to complete any balls. Again, that's a problem in its own right, but he was very good in the first half. And then ultimately, as we talked about in the group chat this week, you know, his stats really plummet, at least from a completion percentage going into the second half. And that could be some strategy, etc. But let's focus on the good to start, guys. That first half, you know, 17 points, finally able to score on your first possession of the game after, you know, the fumble, which we'll get to in special teams. But, man, they look good. I think that's what people kind of would or would want to expect out of this Gopher offense, Derek.
Yeah, so Illinois, much to their identity, I mean, they played in running situations. They play with a bare front, which is covering the center and both guards. They bring the linebackers up, so you effectively have five defensive linemen. It's hard to run against that, particularly with zone running. And then behind it, they play with a single high man coverage. They play with a really deep safety whose job is just to take anything that gets behind, any player that gets beat deep in man coverage, just to double that up. And then underneath, they mix press and cushion man coverage. So almost exclusively all man coverage. And I think one thing that jumped out to me is that Ethan much more comfortable throwing into man coverage than reading and diagnosing complex zone coverages. So I think there was a level of comfort there for pretty much most of the game, being able to try and, no, execution wasn't always there, but mentally I think that it was a solid game for him. And I think for most of the game was able to play one of his better games. So yeah, throwing the ball, I thought that, I thought he looked more comfortable. And then I think that, I think I said this to both of you guys yesterday, probably my hottest take on this team this year, or on one part of the team, is that I think these receivers are playing really well. They're not always executing in terms of catching the ball or the quarterback getting the ball on target, but in terms of route running, they're doing really well, I think. And that's not always showing up because either the execution is poor or they're in a game script situation where they're just not throwing the ball. But if you play a team like Illinois, your whole offense is predicated on being able to beat man coverage. If you can't beat man coverage, you're going to score less than 14 points. They were able to beat man coverage for most of the game. Again, just to say one more time, they didn't always execute on it. They had a couple drops. They had a couple missed passes. But they're getting open. I thought this receiving core, they got open against North Carolina. They got open against pretty much every defense besides Michigan. So I think this receiving core continues to be bright. I don't know that the game philosophy is going to change, if I'm being blunt, and I don't know if the execution throwing the ball is going to get better. But I think those were a couple bright spots, is Ethan, you know, being more comfortable with man coverage, and I think the route running continues to be good. They're getting open, the receiving core.
Well, here's what I want to talk about, Luke. We talked about in the preview and scored any points in their opening possession.
Yeah.
And yet here we are. And I got people still angry with me after I say Minnesota scored on their opening possession. And then I only can imagine they have their glasses sitting on the tip of their nose. They slide them up in between and go, well, actually, because Corey Crooms fumbled the kickoff, it's not points on the opening drive. Okay. If you want to die on that hill, it's a weird freaking hill to die on. All I know is
you don't have a possession.
When they touched the ball for the first time,
yeah.
When Nathan Beaux put that right hand on the pigskin, for the first time, at the end of that drive, Minnesota got points. They got a touchdown. I'll take it. Yeah. And they looked like they knew what they wanted to do. I mean, they looked like they were ready for what Illinois wanted to do. Now, was Ethan's throw to Elijah Spencer good? Certainly wasn't. And Spencer had cooked the corner there.
Yeah, and a great adjustment by him.
But Spencer makes a great catch. I'm happy to see him have success there. Daniel Jackson continues to play well. Minnesota actually gets points on their first three possessions. Like, it's not pretty at times, and I'm not here to tell you it's but I'm just happy to see. Like, I want to take a small win on offense for that. Is on your first three possessions of the game, you got two touchdowns and a field goal. Now, the one everybody wants to talk about is the field goal, but I also want to highlight, to Derek's point, I think Daniel Jackson continues to look really good, and I was a little surprised he played in this game because I had heard that he got banged up in practice this week, but he obviously played, made a big impact. I think Chris Ottman-Bell looked as healthy as I've seen him all year. Corey Crooms we'll get to, because two massive drops that played a big part of this game. Elijah Spencer obviously comes on, but if you can win versus man coverage, which let me tell you, do you know who Minnesota plays next week? Illinois' former defensive coordinator, who largely plays the same defense with that safety 20-plus yards down the field and a lot of man. Mm-hmm. So if Minnesota can win against Illinois in man coverage, I have a strong suspicion they're going to be able to do it against Purdue next week in West Lafayette.
I want to highlight just some bright spots again, and then we do need to talk about some of the glaring issues that we saw. One, I loved the play call on 4th and 3 that went to Corey Crooms. You can call the pick, you cannot call a pick, whatever, but that was a really clever play. Extends the drive and then ultimately results in a pass completion to Brevin Spanford for 31 yards for a touchdown. And Brevin, again, was able to come on and have what was probably his best game of the season by my standards, 3 catches for 58 yards and a touchdown. You know, the long touchdown obviously was very much the crown jewel of the day for him. And then the other thing I want to highlight just from an offensive perspective was just the distribution of balls that were caught and, you know, thrown and caught, right? Brevin Spanford had 3 catches. Daniel Jackson had 2. Corey Crooms had 3. Chris Ottman Bell had 2. Elijah Spencer had 1. We had, you know, we had 5 different pass catchers. I think largely most of that in the first half, with the exception of Daniel Jackson's long reception. But, you know, the distribution definitely helps and makes it easier on an offense. Jordan Newbin looked pretty solid. You got to give Illinois credit. They were able to bow up and really were able to stop the run for the most part. On the day, the Gophers only amassed 93 yards on 37 carries. But Jordan Newbin on the day, 19 for 75. It was nice to see Zach Evans get back in there. I don't think, for my money, that Zach Evans looked completely healthy, Ryan. I don't know what you think, but for my money, he just didn't look quite himself.
I mean, he looked healthy enough. Do I think he's 100%? No. Do I think anybody is really 100% at this stage of the season? Not really. But I think the other larger point within that, the Minnesota Moving Company up front, Derek, for yet again another matchup against a Brett Bielema coach team, they didn't win up front. And that was the frustrating part to me, especially in that first half, is I think Minnesota ran the ball 17 times for 61 yards. Johnny Newton wasn't there in the first half. Johnny Newton, Illinois' star defensive tackle, going to be a top 20 pick in the next NFL draft, returns. What does Minnesota do in the second half? 18 carries for 32 yards. They just couldn't run the ball at any point. And I just think about some key instances in this game where it would have been nice if Minnesota could get some push. But I just didn't think Minnesota's physicality matched that of Illinois. And I also think you're starting to see a couple of warts where maybe the athleticism for Minnesota also couldn't match up to what Illinois had up front.
Yeah, I think that's correct, particularly in the second half. Illinois played with a bare front. It's hard to zone run against that. It's not impossible. You have to press the outside, and largely becomes a feast or famine game because there's so many players near the line of scrimmage that it really takes away. You're going to get 2 or 3 yards or you're going to get 10 plus. You don't get much in the middle, and they weren't able to get any chunk plays running. So weren't able to leak through. And I think in the second half, so let me back up. You want to rely more on gap scheme running, which they did run a little bit more of this game. I was a little disappointed they didn't run more counter. That's a good play against a bare front. And having Illinois scouted, I was expecting to see that and didn't. They did run some power, maybe one or two counters. But they did try, of course. It's Minnesota. They did try to run the ball and stick with it, but didn't have much success. And then in the second half, your comment on the athleticism, I think, shines through, where Illinois started doing two things adjustment in the second half against the run. Their 3 techniques just started gap jumping, either play side or backside, which basically is an unsound technique, but you just let your athletes be athletes. And Minnesota really couldn't match that up. They were getting penetration and jumping gaps, and the Minnesota guard and tackles weren't able to match them athletically. So you had a lot of guys leaking through and getting in the backfield. Secondly, being that Illinois plays man coverage, the defenders who have man coverage on either the running back or the tight end, they started blitzing through. So it would be a delayed blitz where once they recognize post-snap that the ball is not going to be, that their receiver isn't going to go out on a route, they would delay blitz and get into the backfield, and that stopped them on a key third down and a couple of other big plays in the second half. And the way you counter that is you have to run play action, and then when you get that delay blitz, you have to leak that player out, either that running back or tight end out on a delayed, basically a delayed screen or check down. And Minnesota never went to that, mainly because they don't throw the ball in the second half, which is frustrating. So those things combined, I think, made it a long day for the front five, Minnesota's offensive line, and there just wasn't much there.
I'm just chuckling because, I mean, we can address the elephant in the room, I suppose, now, in terms of, I'd argue Ethan Kaliak-Manis might have played his best two games of the season in the last couple of weeks, where mm-hmm. he's had multiple touchdown passes, has one interception, doesn't turn over the ball yesterday, and he looks great in the first half. Yet, how is it in that same statement, the other thing can be true, that Minnesota's only completed a grand total of three passes in the last two second halves combined? How can you have him playing so well in the first half, and then in the second half, it's like a completely different thing happens? Now, before I give my opinion, Luke, let's go to you, and then we'll kick it to Derek.
Yeah, so it's a good question, and I highlighted again early. If you look at the breakdown splits for Ethan, his completion percentage drops as the game goes on. He's almost always best first and second quarter. Third and fourth, he doesn't. I think a real turning point in this game, at least for me, was after the Gophers forced the fumble. They get good field position on the Illinois 12. Ethan throws a ball that should have been caught by Corey Crooms. They don't complete it. Then Jordan Newbin runs for 3 yards to the 9. And then ultimately Ethan gets sacked by Johnny Newton. And then that ultimately forces the field goal. To me, that was kind of a turning point, that it feels like, again, they just kind of turned the passing, or went into their kind of risk averse shell. I know that on the next possession they complete a ball to Chris Ottman Bell, but ultimately that drive just implodes and it isn't able to go anywhere. And then we get into punt fest back and forth until ultimately Minnesota forces another fumble and then is able to get the long pass to Daniel Jackson. But I, the risk averseness jumps in the second half. Why? It's really hard for me to really understand and fathom.
Is it that hard? Because it's just
no. It's
Fleck.
No, I know it's Fleck, and that's the thing that's hard for me to fathom, is that like he's so stubborn to stick with it, right? Like he just
18 carries for 32 yards.
Yeah,
and that man says, what I only can assume into the headset, we're running the football against Johnny Newton, and our front that didn't really get pushed in the first half certainly isn't getting it in the second half. And what has Minnesota's Achilles heel been all year? Something that the offensive coordinator Greg Harbaugh highlighted with the media this week. In his own words, the Achilles heel of this offense is off-schedule situations. What does that mean? Second and third and long. What happened in the entire second half, Luke? Minnesota had 7 third downs. They didn't convert a single one.
Mm-hmm.
What was within that? The average distance to go on those 7 third downs in the second half was nearly 8 yards. The old coordinator knows they stink on second and third and long, yet they're running the ball when they're not getting any push. And to me, we're getting back to the whole definition of insanity from a few years ago. I just feel like it's so clear that it doesn't matter who the offensive coordinator is. We've seen Kirk Ciarrocca, Mike Sanford, Kirk Ciarrocca again, and now Greg Harbaugh. And yet nearly through 7 years, you know, when things look very risk averse, it's the sticky fingerprints of the head coach showing up on the offense and dictating what they do. And that's how you got to take it from me, Luke.
I guess what bugs you guys more? The field goal before the end of the half, right? Where they're like, okay, we're in field goal range, we're just going to stick with it largely, right? Or is it just the whole second half? I would also argue that after the interception, you know, the pass incompletion from Ethan, that was a big one. You alluded to it earlier, Ryan. Well, I think,
I mean, let's call it what it was. Yeah. Minnesota gets the ball at the 12. They dial up a shot to Corey Crooms, and Corey Crooms just misses it. And it would have been 24-14. That game completely turns.
Yeah.
Yes, the defensive back for Illinois was in coverage, but he did not get his hands on Corey Crooms in terms of being able to impede him from catching that ball. It has to be a catch. Or Minnesota gets a third down, they run a slot fade with Corey Crooms, and it hits him in the helmet. Like, could it have been a better ball from Ethan there? Yes. Should a veteran receiver like that be able to make that play? Yes. And so if you're asking me, it's that third and nine run call, which has the head coach's fingerprints all over it, especially considering you don't get the ball to start the second half.
Exactly.
Because you screwed up on the opening kickoff, and it felt like maybe you get the ball to start the second half. But that's, again, where it's just the head coach wants to take the points. I mean, I looked up the stats today. Would it shock either one of you to know no team has kicked more field goals than the University of Minnesota in the Big Ten this year?
It doesn't surprise me. One other play I want to get to, and I want to get your thoughts here, Derek. I actually thought this was a great play call. So this is after the Tyler Newbern interception. Minnesota runs with Jordan Newbern for 3 yards. Illinois calls a timeout. Ethan runs for 3 more yards. So you're basically sitting at 3rd and 4. And then they basically call a pop pass to the tight end, which effectively was just a rocket that I don't know. Was it Calarup or what? Was it Gears there? I don't think you really had a chance to catch that one. That was a huge play that you need to be able to convert, Derek, because, you know, at that point, there's 3:04 left on the clock. You punt with 2:47, and that goes, you know, so now Illinois has 2:47 to go down where they ultimately score a touchdown. But if you're able to complete that pass, you know, they're going to get the ball back with maybe 45 seconds left, no timeouts, maybe 60 seconds, something like that. That was a really, really tough miss in a huge play that really came back to bite them.
That was a perfect play call, and the play was there, and it would have been a first down, which would have theoretically taken another 120 seconds off the clock if you end up running it. And they didn't execute all the things we talked about on the defensive side and how they're not recognizing things post snap mentally. It's almost the opposite with the Gopher passing game. It's execution. It's not the fact that they're running the wrong routes or they don't have the right pass protection or things like that. And many times it's a good play call. It's run correctly. It's not a missed assignment. It's just that either the throw isn't there or they don't make the catch. As Ryan just pointed out with, you know, 2 catches that were dropped. And in this case, the ball was airmailed. It was out, you know, way too, you know, I know you want to get the ball out quickly because it is a pop pass and you have to fit it in before the safety comes down on the tight end, but he's wide open, just need to throw it in his chest and it would have been a first down. You know, my 2 cents on, you know, just, I know we've answered the question over the years now several times about the risk aversion, and I've probably answered it myself a few times. And so in an effort to not be repetitive, I'll take a different angle on this. I just think that in two different situations, when the Gophers get into field goal range on any drive or in the second half, if they have a lead or it's a one score game, in both of those situations, I just think that they're way overthinking it.
That's a good way.
Just way too much. I mean, if you're humming along on offense, you know, maybe you're mostly running, but you're throwing passes, you're getting first downs, you're moving the chains. It's just as predictable as the sun coming up that when they get into field goal range, all of a sudden everything changes. Everything changes. The play calling changes. The execution changes. It becomes, we have to conserve this and we can't get sacked and we have to make sure we don't call this and we got to watch the clock and we got to try. It's just like, just play football. Stop overthinking it. Just keep running. Now, when you get into the red zone, yes, I understand things change because the defense fundamentally changes in the red zone. There are principles that completely change. But, you know, when you're at the 25 to 35 yard line, just keep playing football. You know, that would be my advice. They're just overthinking. And the same thing in the second half. And I guess I would answer your question, Luke. I was more bothered by the mix of play calling in the second half in this game because of the fact that we weren't having success running the ball. We've lamented some games where they have a lead, but they are running the ball well, and we still complain about it because they rely so heavily on the run, and we think, boy, if you could just, you know, there's a couple passing plays there. If you're able to execute, you could bust this game wide open. That's not even the case. Yeah, the game on Saturday, they weren't even getting space in the run game. To the point where, again, I just they're overthinking it. Why don't you just keep running what you were in the first half? Why did you change? Mm-hmm. You know, they're throwing the ball effectively. Ethan looked comfortable in man coverage. You're not getting much in the run game. I understand you're not going to completely abandon that, but why change everything up? It got to the point where it seems to be this way in the second half, if it's a one score game, where they just throw less and less and less and less. And you're down to the final 8 minutes of the game, maybe I can see that. But, you know, when you're in the middle of the third quarter, just play football. Just keep make your adjustments at halftime and just don't worry about obsessing over managing the game until you're down to the final couple possessions.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up. You know, Fleck is known for having a culture that he effectively micromanages almost to like a obnoxious point, right? Like every tiny little detail is like orchestrated and planned, and you know they're trying to build a culture, and all of it largely to be positive humans, right? And I think that he should be applauded for, you know. But in the end, that micromanagement might actually carry over into the reality of the game theory, right? And micromanaging that, at some point you have to just trust your offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator and not overthink these things.
Well, and I think here's where becoming obsessed with winning games one specific way, here's where it really hurts you. And Ryan talked about it right off the bat. You now have a game script where you're relying on your defense to play either lights out or really, really good for 12 games. And if you have two or three games where your defense just isn't playing well, Northwestern, the defense just didn't play well. Against Illinois, the defense just, they had a bad game. The problem is you don't have the mindset or the development in the offense to overcome that. So when the defense doesn't play well, you're done. You don't have the mindset, the mentality, or the approach. I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, you should look to understand that some games you might have to win 45-40. Mm-hmm. Some games you might have to win 14-7. That's just the reality of Power 5 college football. I think we've become obsessed with trying to win in a specific way in every game.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting you bring that up. The really good teams, they are going to find ways to win, right? And they're going to find ways to win in lots of different ways, right? I think, for example, the other team that I follow the most, obviously, is Washington, right? And Washington just won a game 52-42 against USC. They also have a game in there, fellas, where they beat Arizona State 15-7. They didn't play well in any facet of the game, but for the most part, they are going to outscore you because they don't play a lot of great defense for the most part. But even against a bad team, they found a way to win. Yes, you have to find a way to win games in a multitude of different ways. Ryan, I don't want to get you worked up. We got to work in special teams before we get down to kind of like looking at the Big Ten West and also getting into the games that were in the Big Ten. But we have to acknowledge again that special teams did hurt this team. The fumble hurt.
Hold on.
Okay.
I want to echo one more sentiment on the offense before we get to my favorite part of this team, which never changes. As much as it is about, and you guys have highlighted it, why do we think anything's going to change? Like Derek laments the way that the offensive game plan or what is called changes from the first or second half. I'll continue to say it's Fleck and his influence changing up everything. It's just, it changes everything. They get risk averse and you just have to win a certain way. Or even you go back to that final offensive drive. Minnesota runs read option on second down. If Ethan just puts his foot in the ground and gets outside of Brevin Spann forward, it's third and one, if not a first down there. And then on the third down play, pop pass, they get creative. They go with an unbalanced look where the left tackle, Ariante Irisarry, goes to the right. You have Nick Kallerup essentially be the left tackle. It's open, and Ethan just abandons all of his principles and gets a Johan Duran 103-mile-an-hour fastball 4 feet over his head. It's like the plays are there. It's the execution in those two instances that are lacking, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating. But let's talk, you know, again quickly about special teams. The fumble hurts, obviously. They were able to avoid, you know, blunders in the Michigan State game and only give up field goals. In this game, they gave up the touchdown. That's probably the difference in the game. That fumble just really hurts. You feel for Sean Tyler. You know, he's obviously in some sort of funk. That was bad.
I don't know how Sean Tyler, peace and love to that young man, and I know the run out for him has been horrible. It's like a 1% outcome of what he was hoping for here at the University of Minnesota. But let's be honest, what realistic scenario is Sean Tyler seeing the field again for Minnesota at this point?
It's a good question. I couldn't tell you, man. When I saw the
even
opening,
throwing him out there on special teams or kick return signaled to me with Zach Evans returning, he was not a part of the offensive game plan. Because in games where Sean Tyler was, he wasn't on kick return.
Yeah.
Well, he was on kick return this game. He had 3 career kickoff return touchdowns, yet there has to be a way for me to quantify, Luke, that Gopher kick return has to be the worst EPA per event in the entire season every time they actually return a football.
Yeah, that has been a problem. I don't know what the solution is. You have to get
fair catch everything, because I'm going to assume, Luke, you don't read. Well, did you read what I wrote after the game?
No, I didn't. Not
one
not
day
yet.
You're going to read me, and it's going to be a glorious day.
I've read sometimes, but
in the first 8 games of the year heading into this game, Minnesota's kick return, when they had their primary kick returner return it,
they lost
75 yards of field position compared to a fair catch in 8 games. That's almost 10 yards extra this offense has to go because their kick return is so anemic. Even if Sean Tyler hangs on to that football, by the way, Minnesota starts at the 20 instead of the 25.
That was going to be my point. Did anybody notice that, yes, the fumble was very unfortunate, but nobody was blocked again.
Yeah.
Did you notice on the second kick return when Chris Ottman-Bell was back there, Minnesota gets lucky to not be flagged because Chris Ottman-Bell's on kick return number 7. Aiden Goosby's on kickoff return number 7.
Oh, no, I didn't
Can
see that.
Can you imagine if there would have been another penalty there, which there should have been, and then they took Chris Ottman-Bell and put back Evan Redding? Like, another unforgivable thing. Like, that can't happen, having 2 players with the same number on the field. How does the special teams coordinator not know that when he takes Sean Tyler off? I don't know, guys. Like, Dragan Kesich,
he's been good.
A rock star. Brady Weeks is a rock star. Mark Crawford has largely been fine, and he's fine. And I'll take 7th. I think as we sit here today, he's 6th or 7th in the Big Ten in net punt. He's average. Cool. That's my barometer.
It's been his best season. Right, by far, in my opinion.
Yeah, but instead of Minnesota being 10th, they're now 7th, which is whatever. But, like, their return and coverage units are just – I don't know, guys. I mean, how much more time do we have to spend on this each and every week? Because you know Rob Wanger's never going to have anything happen to him. Like, I just – they. What is the one question I ask myself after every effing game that I watch? Special teams help you or hurt you. Bottom line, you gifted the opening kickoff to a team inside the red zone and they got a touchdown. Imagine if Illinois doesn't get an extra possession that starts in the red zone. What happens in this game?
Mm-hmm. The thing about special teams is, so they must value something about Wanger otherwise. I know he's a special teams coordinator, but he also coaches the rush ends, I think it was, or he was involved with linebackers.
Stop it. Rob Wanger on the Minnesota freaking website has rush ends in his title. I have been to more Gopher football practices than as any media member in the last 7 years. I've never seen Rob Wanger work with rush ends.
So that's just a decoy.
I don't understand it. And to Derek's point that he's made in previous weeks and he just made, it's not even the return men. It's these guys are getting killed at like the 15 because no one's blocking in front of them.
Yeah.
And as Derek said before, and I'll echo it again, just blow up whatever your return schemes are because they're bad.
So,
and you're even punt return, Luke. They have returned the least amount of punts in the Big Ten.
Yes, I'm aware.
You haven't had a return touchdown since 2018. Like, what? These are the same concepts year after year after year, and they're not working. What are we doing?
I think the thing that's challenging is for me to swallow is, you know, in business or in life or anything, if you can't produce, there's accountability. And what I'm not trying to say is that you have to fire someone in every single instance, right? But something has to change. And fundamentally,
how do you fire Andrew Soder after four games, but here we are in year seven of Rob Winger.
Well, that was going to be my point. Yeah, you stole my thunder. Like, that's exactly what I was going to say. No, it's fine. But like, how do we determine that the tight ends coach basically gets fired? He may be still on the staff for all I know.
He is still on the staff. I actually talked to him before the Iowa game. He's in a lesser role, but like, why does he get four games of grace?
Exactly.
But you're.
When it's seemingly so apparent, you know, and you could move Rob Winger to a different role, but like at least get a fresh perspective, right? So, I think the only way you blow it up is by making a change. I just can't believe that they're going to blow it up with Winger. That's the part that's just confusing to me. And I know that some of the stats say that they do okay, but it's largely because of the conservative nature, right?
The only people who think that are the people who look at S&P, like I talked about.
Yes.
On the pro, like I even get into quarrels with people on Gopher Illustrated about this, where Minnesota's ranked via Pro Football Focus the worst special teams unit in the Big Ten. In Power 5, they were 65th of 68 teams, according to Pro Football Focus's metrics. Now, you can look at S&P, where I think they're somehow slightly above average. But I also am just like, use your own eyes. Use your own brain.
Yeah.
Like, stop trying to – like, the bottom line is they're hurting. You can say that if they're above average, below average, whatever you may believe. I just – I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's frustrating. Let's get a break, and then we can talk about the broader Big Ten West, and then we'll also talk about the games that we saw this week. Once again, Ryan, the Burns Insurance Agency is supporting Gopher Gridiron Radio. I know that Bill hit a deer. He has great coverage. It's that season once again where the deer are running, they got nowhere to hide, and we know people are going to find accidents.
Well, I actually just had my renewal come up from my independent insurance agent located in Oakdale, Minnesota. I got my home and auto with him. I saved over $500. You know what I did? Absolutely nothing, because my favorite independent insurance agent put me against 20 different companies and found the best coverage at the best price. So I got $500 back for my budget next year, and I did absolutely nothing. So if you're thinking to yourself, I'd love for that to happen. Well, lucky for you, he's licensed in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, New York, Florida, and Utah. So if you live in one of those great states, or you have your home, your auto, your ATV, your commercial business, whatever it may be, go to insurancebyburns.com, give him a call, or you can email him today at bill@insurancebyburns.com. Save money today with your favorite local independent insurance agent, the Burns Insurance Agency.
Okay, in an effort to make the story make sense, let's give you the context, and then we'll get into the broader Big Ten West conversation. So on the day Ohio State is able to beat Rutgers at Rutgers 35-16, Rutgers definitely had opportunities in the red zone, wasn't able to capitalize. A huge pick six definitely swung this game. They did hang tight for a while, but the mighty Buckeyes eventually ran away with it. Gavin Wimsett wasn't great on the day, but ultimately, fellas, this was closer than the score indicates.
I mean, Rutgers was winning at halftime.
Yeah.
And then Ohio State clicks it on like Ohio State can this year. There may be not a team I was more wrong on in the Big Ten this year than Ohio State. I just thought that they were going to drop two games, and their defense has been the story this year to me. I mean, as much as it is Marvin Harrison Jr., who had another two touchdowns in this game and is arguably the best player in college football, it's the Ohio State defense going from giving up explosive plays left and right, especially in big spot games to really good opponents, to now that they have been very disruptive up front. They're the ones creating explosives on defense. And I will be curious to see what Minnesota and Rutgers exchange from this game, considering Minnesota plays Ohio State in 2 weeks. But Derek, Ohio State just continues to chug along.
Yeah, I think that just kind of sticking to a theme here, it's been interesting to see Ohio State kind of change philosophies this year. You know, they normally wanted to just outscore teams, you know, win 56-14 or 56-30 or whatever. And they're really relying on their defense. when Travion Henderson's healthy and they like running the ball, they have incredible talent at receiver. I think quarterback is okay, but they're plenty happy just basically playing even for the first couple quarters and then winning games now, like scoring 28 or 30 points. They've just completely shifted their philosophy, and I think that's just in part due to the confidence they have in their defense. And I would only additional comment, I would say defense is incredible, particularly in the red zone goal line situation. A number of times Rutgers got down there and just could get nothing out of it. So if you're looking forward for the Gophers in that tough test against Ohio State coming up, it's going to be really tough in the red zone against that Ohio State defense.
All right, next game. So Purdue takes the crown away from Minnesota as scoring the most points against Michigan on the season. They amass 13. Michigan, though, amasses 17 in the first quarter and 41 for the entire game. J.J. McCarthy, 24-37 for 335 yards. Blake Corum added 15 carries for 44 yards and 3 touchdowns. I imagine if you asked Purdue fans, hey, you held Michigan to only 110 yards rushing, and a 3.2 yard carry, do you think you think you played tough? And ultimately that wasn't the case. Hudson Card on the day for Purdue, who the Gophers will play next week, was 12 of 28 for 144 yards, one touchdown and a pick. Michigan, stealing signs or not, they are really tough fellas.
I mean, Purdue, that's the surprising part to me, is Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards combined for 23 carries for 65 yards. Within that is 4 rushing touchdowns, because J.J. McCarthy had 24 completions for an average of 14 yards per completion. So that'll be something to highlight, where Michigan's receivers can win versus press man. Minnesota plays against Purdue's next week, who is Ryan Walters, who is the former defensive coordinator of Illinois last year. So Minnesota goes from a very similar defense that they went against in Illinois to now a very similar defense that they're going to see with Purdue, or even Luke Purdue, or even Derek, 24 carries for 99 yards is not bad for those guys.
No,
for Purdue, it's just Michigan is so good, even when they're not in the midst of turmoil.
Yeah, they have it all. I mean, this game happened to be huge passing plays one after another, but Michigan has talent everywhere, and They will win any way that it takes, and they can kind of, we saw that there's particularly their speed on offense is just, it's really tough to match. And if you want to commit to taking away their run game, they're perfectly fine with that. They'll just throw the ball and you're not going to be able to match their speed on the perimeter. So Michigan again comes up with a number of big plays, and they're a, with all of the, what do you want to call it, turmoil, controversy, what have you, I can tell you that absolutely nobody in the state of Michigan cares, because the fans were as electric as ever. They cheer. They think that they're looking at a national championship football team, and they could care less about anything off the field.
All right. Penn State bounces back, winning 51-15, a team that's really in free fall in Maryland. And on the day, Maryland had 4 turnovers. Drew Aller was 25 of 34 for 240 yards and 4 touchdowns. Penn State, obviously.
Look at the rushing numbers from Maryland, Luke.
Oh, I didn't see that. Oh, my. Minus 49 yards. Minus 49 yards with a long of 4 yards. Oh, boy. That is rough.
They literally ran the ball like 7 or 8 times with their running backs, and then Tua got sacked so many times that they ended up with negative 49 rushing yards on the day.
They only had one guy with positive yards at all. This Billy Edwards, 1 carry for 4 yards. Like, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Did you watch any of this game, Derek?
No, I didn't get a chance to see it.
It would have been a bigger spread if Penn State didn't kick 3 or 4 field goals within the red zone. It's just Penn State finally figured it out. Drew Aller threw
incredible
4 touchdowns.
Yeah.
I know there's some prognosticating, but I mean, we're talking about Drew Aller, who's thrown 20 touchdowns, 1 pick, and is completing 63% of his passes. Like, I understand he doesn't come without his warts, but I think those warts are exaggerated. But for Penn State, who had not played well the 2 previous weeks against Ohio State, which no one really plays well against Ohio State, and then really toying around with Indiana, it's good to see them go on the road and actually turn it on before their upcoming matchup with Michigan this weekend.
All right, let's get into the important games that impact the race in the Big Ten West. Wisconsin loses to Indiana, my Tom Allen Indiana team, 20-14. Obviously a tough loss for them. Wisconsin moves to 5-4, 3-3 in conference, which would be the same as the Gophers now. But yeah, this was definitely a surprise, fellas.
I think it comes down to, for me, I think Wisconsin had 16 third downs, and I think their average distance to go was like 8 yards or something. And it turns out when you're already playing your backup quarterback, which it is interesting to note, Tanner Mordecai, I think, was listed as questionable for this game. So I think he's going to be back sooner than later, and probably for that Minnesota game. But when you don't have Braylon Allen, who didn't play in this one, when Ches Malusi's out for the year, it's just, you look at the way that it played out. I mean, they threw 41 times, and it just, I don't think Wisconsin's very good in the trenches. I didn't think that last year. I still don't think that. And that's why Tom Allen's scrappy team is able to do what they do now. Again, you have some turnover issues, but Derek, I don't think Wisconsin's good enough without their starting quarterback, their starting two tailbacks, to beat a team like Indiana when you don't have the obvious edge up front.
Yeah, I got a chance to take a close look at this game and watch most of it. And a couple things, oddly enough, I was pretty impressed by the passing concepts that Wisconsin is calling. I don't think they have the athletes to execute. I don't think they, as Luke always brings up, I don't think they have the personnel to fit that scheme right now. And so I think what's happened this year is I don't think they've ever really been able to click very well passing, but they've been able to fall back on Braylon Allen and real early in the year, Ches Malusi, and just sort of fall back into old habits and run the ball good enough to win. Well, they couldn't do that this game because of injuries, so they really had to rely on passing. And there are plays to be made with those passing concepts. I mean, it's a completely different offense than we've seen the Gophers play Wisconsin the last X number of years. And I just don't think they have the players to execute them, because there are plays, again, to be made passing. So you take those two things out, they just couldn't do enough on offense. And that's not to take away from Indiana, who just continues to be an incredibly emotional, hard, they're a lunch pail team. Yeah. They bring it. They bring emotion. They bring effort. They play all out. And that's a team that you can't sleep on them. You got to play a good game. You can't have a bad game, because they're going to bring it every week.
The last thing I want to note here, Luke, is even within that, how does Wisconsin lose a game like this? Penalties. 8 mm-hmm. for 78 versus 2 for 30 for Indiana. This is one of the things that Daniel House brought to my attention before the year. Luke Fickell teams historically have not been very disciplined in the penalty category. And as we sit here through 6 conference games for the Wisconsin Badgers, they are the third most penalized team with 39 penalties through 6 games.
Yeah, and this week, fellas, every team will now have a conference victory in the Big Ten. Indiana gets their first there against Wisconsin. And additionally, Michigan State, who the Gophers beat last week, notched a win over Nebraska 20-17. Nebraska moves to 5-4, 3-3 in conference, much like the Gophers in Wisconsin. But the story of this game, from what I can tell, I didn't get a chance to watch it, but 3 turnovers for Nebraska. They had a 10-10 tie at the half. They took a lead into the third quarter, but ultimately, or Michigan State took a lead in the third quarter, and you know, they played even in the fourth. This just, the turnovers are just always going to kill you, fellas.
When Nebraska can't run the football, they are going to have a very hard time winning. Who does that sound like? Essentially any Big Ten West team. But we talked about last week that Michigan State has a good run defense. I don't know if anybody listened to us, but they do. And that's where, if Henrik Harburg has to drop back 28, 30 times, there's going to be mistakes made, especially with the amount of injuries that Nebraska has on offense. And that's where he commits 2 turnovers. I think they also lost a fumble. And that was Harburg as well. So when your quarterback commits 3 turnovers and Michigan State commits none, plus they're at home, this is one of those games, Luke, where Vegas looks so, so smart, because I believe Nebraska was only like a 1 or a 2 point favorite in this game. Actually, it looks like it was all the way bet up to Nebraska -3. But you're thinking to yourself, Nebraska had won like 5 of their last 6 coming in. Michigan State had lost five in a row, I believe, and then Michigan State wins this and the spread's only three. This is one of the ones, that's why they have such nice casinos out on the Strip.
Yeah, and I think the only thing I'd have to add about this is, just to echo your thoughts, Ryan, Michigan State has athletes. They have not been consistent. They haven't put together. They've had to deal with a lot of off the field, obviously. But they do have athletes. I think some people said coming out of the Gophers win last week, oh, Michigan State's a terrible team. Yeah, they haven't played well, but they do have talent. And so I think you're spot on. They do have a good run defense. They do have some good bodies in that front four, and they were able to largely take that away, and Nebraska just doesn't have a counter for it if they're not able to run.
All right, so that context is both Nebraska and Wisconsin have dropped games, which means if Minnesota can win, they will sit atop the Big Ten, you know, the Big Ten West. Unfortunately, they lose. And if Iowa would have lost, they would have been sitting atop alone. But again, reality, that does not come to fruition, I should say. And Iowa wins 10-7 against Northwestern at Wrigley Field. There is no scoring in the first half. Iowa was able to get a touchdown in the third quarter, and then they notch a field goal to win. Ultimately, this was not a pretty game if you're looking for elegant offense. Deacon Hill was 10 of 15 for 65 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. Sullivan for Northwestern was 12 of 19 for 81 yards. There just wasn't a lot of offense to be had in this game, fellas. Both teams played good defense. There was, if you look at game on paper, one explosive play the entire game. It just wasn't a pretty game, but you know, you got to give Iowa credit. They found a way to win.
Iowa get their lone touchdown? A blocked punt.
I know. Some
outstanding field position, and they're able to convert. It's just
and did you guys remarkable, see Barrick. Did you guys see how Northwestern got their touchdown?
No.
The most shocking thing, a bad punt by Torrey Taylor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was the only bad punt I have ever seen that gentleman kick. A short, low hang time, the Northwestern player ran up on it and fielded it and returned it like another 20, 25 yards into, I don't think it was quite in the red zone, but that set them up for a scoring touchdown a few plays later. So that was the most shocking thing, and that's how Northwestern was able to get their seven, and it was tied 7-7 until, you know, late in the game when they kicked the game winner. So that was really interesting, but it was all of exactly what we thought other than that. Huge play on Iowa's defense, and then just a lot of punting in the first half.
So here's the question, and obviously we're an arm distance away from this. Like, obviously, if Minnesota's going to have a shot, Iowa is going to have to lose a couple games. They're very much in the driver's seat. But if you're Iowa, they've already fired their offensive coordinator, you know, following the season. Like, is Deacon Hill really what you want?
The whole Iowa thing is just so strange to me, because to your point, they have a lame duck offensive coordinator. You had to have Kirk Ferentz come out, makes his first public comments about his son being let go by the interim AD, or will be let go, and then he gets very 30,000-foot view about, I don't know about what's going on, has to come out the next day and clarify, yeah, I still want to keep coaching. And then you have a game where I believe Iowa has 169 yards of total offense. If this thing's just going to be blown up after the season anyway offensively, I just have a hard time believing Deacon Hill is the best quarterback that you have there. But that also, if that's true, is a gigantic indictment on the Iowa quarterback recruiting scene. Now, to your point, Luke, also, how does Minnesota still get to Indianapolis? They got to win two of their final three, which you're going to be favored this weekend against.
Or three of three. Or three of three. You could win three of three. It's not likely, but.
Yeah, you could win three of three, but I'd say the most realistic scenario then, if we're going to go that route, you beat Purdue, you beat Wisconsin at the end of the year, which would be the first time you beat Wisconsin and Iowa in the same year since, I believe, 1993. But then you're going to need Iowa to lose two of their final three games, which let's run through those quick. They have a home game this weekend against Rutgers, Minnesota East. They have a home game against Illinois. And then they are on the road in Lincoln for Black Friday. Is it crazy for me to think there's like a 40-ish% chance that they can absolutely lose two of their final three games, because as we've seen, there's not a big difference to me between Iowa and Rutgers, Iowa and Illinois, and Iowa and Nebraska. And all it's going to take is a turnover here, a turnover there. You score 17 points on the Hawkeyes, you're probably going to win. I mean, what percent chance would you give it that Iowa loses two of their final three? I'll start with Derek. It's home versus Rutgers, home versus Illinois, on the road in Lincoln on Black Friday.
I hear what you're saying, but I've just seen Iowa do it too many times. I know they're not as good this year, but they're perfectly happy winning one score games. I think that they somehow, some way win out. I think maybe Nebraska is the one that I would put as a question mark, but I don't think I would put it at less than 20% chance they lose too.
Yeah, I probably agree that like they're content with that. They don't care if they win, you know, 3-0 or 2-0, right? They'll just find the way. And they've got the defense and the special teams to do it. And, you know, to the point of like how that we made earlier where Minnesota's got to find a way to win other ways, Iowa really doesn't, right? They seem to, in recent memory, not have to. Now, there have been years where they've won games where they've scored 40 points and given up 40 points, but in the Kirk Ferentz era. But the reality is, like, this is just their identity, and they'll continue to go forward with it. And you know what? Kudos to them. The situation, though, while really awkward, is the one thing that I think could make them really stumble towards the end. We don't know the inner workings behind the scenes. I understand that, you know, Kirk Ferentz can't make the decision because of nepotism, etc. But, you know, things can go pear-shaped there. I'm not suggesting that it will, but I think that's the one thing that could make things like really awkward. And it already has, and they've already been able to overcome that at least once. I think that they more than likely run the table. I think to your point, Derek, that Nebraska being the one, I think Rutgers is the one that they might have the most trouble with. In all honesty, they'll have Gavin Wimsett, who's a running quarterback. Maybe they just have just enough offense. And Rutgers, to me, is they're kind of a wild card this year, just in general. I wouldn't love to see the Gophers play them, frankly.
I mean, I would just love to see Minnesota playing because it's Kirk Shiroka versus Joe Rossi and yeah. Kirk Hartwell versus Joe Marisimiak. And as Justin Gard knows, I am one to take a lovely stroll down Narrative Street.
Yeah. So the disappointment.
I guess I'm surprised you guys. Is it just, I mean, I heard Derek's reasoning, but is it truly just because Kirk Ferentz has done this for so long that. Because I just think I was not that same Iowa that they if someone scores 13 points on them, which is obviously a lot easier said than done. But it's not insane to think Rutgers could do it or Illinois could do it or Nebraska could do it. Is it you just have a harder time believing at least two of those teams do it against them?
Yeah, I think it's that. I think it's just really unlikely that two of those teams win. And I think that's the thing that's frustrating if you're waking up today a Gopher fan. We record this on Sunday kind of mid-morning, right? Well, we're getting almost to the noon hour here. But you had the opportunity to be in the driver's seat and or, you know, at least still controlling your own destiny for the most part. And they lost that opportunity. They've done that now twice. And that's what's frustrating as a Gopher fan. You know, pods are not pods, but divisions are going away. It's going to get harder, and I think that's the thing that's frustrating. You can be as frustrated as you want with PJ Fleck. You have to give him credit that he's raised the bar, but not getting over the hump and winning the West is something to be that you justifiably have reason to be frustrated with. Okay, and the other elephant in the room is that the Big Ten is obviously changing. I think they'll eventually go to pods. They're almost going to have to. That's a conversation we can have in the offseason. But the college football landscape is changing. This kind of trestle ball mentality, there aren't a lot of people that are doing it, right? If you look at the teams in the top five, nobody's winning games. You know, it's 10-7 or 13-12 or, you know, whatever have you. A lot of points are being scored these days. I'm not saying that defense has to go away, but you have to your earlier point, Derek, you have to find a way to be more efficient because you're now going to be adding a USC, Washington, Oregon, and UCLA. None of those teams play this kind of trestle ball, Derek.
Yeah, I think that There's two sides to this coin. If you're taking a step back and looking at a program like Minnesota, you can't necessarily just try to emulate what they're doing at Alabama or Michigan or places that just quite frankly have more talent year in and year out. So it's probably not a good strategy just to copy them. You have to do something differently. But where I'm left with a little bit of fear is, what other teams other than Iowa, what other teams are consistently winning or in the top 25 or competitive with the trestle ball approach? I think it runs counter, that's my personal opinion here. I think it runs counter to the way that the game is going right now. Now, the game changes all the time. 5 years from now, maybe it swings back. I don't know. But the way the game is going now is it's more and more and more being won and lost on explosive plays. And so I think if you run an offense that in its nature is lacking in explosive plays, that just leaves you in a precarious situation.
Let me add something here. I think the one other team that was winning this way, maybe in part, was Wisconsin prior to Luke Fickell, and they made that change with probably this difference on the horizon, Derek. I'll kick it to you,
Ryan. Well, at least they're trying something new. They're trying to adapt to the ever-changing world of college, which, to Derek's point, looks like it's trending that way, which is why Phil Longo's now there. And I think Fleck would tell you he'd love to be what Iowa is, but his issue is he's not consistent enough on defense, and his special teams are abysmal, whereas special teams, just like they did yet freaking again, didn't want a game against Northwestern where you block a punt, give yourself great field position, and you capitalize. And that's where I think just big picture for Fleck, rest of this year, going into next year, is does he see that? Does he see that the landscape of how you win football games, especially in the Big Ten, when Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA are coming into town, is going to change quite a bit? I mean, does he see that? I'm sure he'd say that, but one of my favorite things to ever say is, I hear what you say, trust what you do. And until we see him actually adjust to the way he's going to have to win a football game, I just don't have faith that we're going to see much different, boys.
Yeah. It'll be something that we'll talk, obviously, in more detail in the offseason, because the landscape is changing, obviously, with the Big Ten. We haven't even gotten into the schedule. We'll do that probably in the offseason as well. But yeah, I mean, it was good to be able to break down this game in the frustration that comes with it. Ultimately, you know, likely unable to win the West. But the fact we've had the opportunity has made Gopher football more enjoyable. But in the end, it's very frustrating. But I want to thank all of you for listening. It's been fun to break these down, you know, win, lose, or draw. Thank you for supporting our sponsors, and please continue to do that. We'll preview up the Purdue game, and we'll look forward to that. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.